You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Even in this Romanian magazine, more closed off country, you see the saint and Roger Moore on the cover.
I wasn't sure whether it was Roger Moore mm-hmm. or not, but I'm pleased to say, and I know some of our listeners are big Roger Moore fans, will be delighted to know that the saint was on in Ceausescu's Romania. This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. Today we're at the Vendor Museum in Los Angeles at their Watching Socialism exhibition. Organised in collaboration with British-Slovenian media historian Sabina Mihelj and British cultural historian Susan Reed, this exhibition focuses on the impact of Cold War-era television programming in Eastern and Western Europe on private lives. Now, many of our fans are the proud owners of a Cold War Conversations coaster, a gift from me to thank them for helping the podcast financially. So, how do you get into this select band? Well, for the price of a couple of coffees a month to cover the show's increasing costs and keep us on the air, you can get one of these sought-after coasters too. Just go to patreon.com/coldwarpod. That's patreon.com/coldwarpod. Now, what would also help us too is you leaving a review in iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, or with your podcast provider. So, back to today's episode. I'm delighted to welcome Anna Rose Cazzano of the Vendor Museum to Cold War Conversations. So welcome. We are going to have a quick whistle-stop tour of the exhibition, which will undoubtedly whet your appetite and make you want to rush down to the vendor. So let's start over here. So there's a number of very impressive commemorative plates here, but there's a common theme on all of them, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. So all of these plates have TV towers on them. And we have a large collection of commemorative plates, and we actually have a lot more that are, that do feature these TV towers. These are all, the Berlin TV tower. And these objects are all, they're all collected here because they show how TV wasn't just like programming changes. TV really changed urban landscapes also. So it's not just something you would watch in your home. It also, TV also had these huge landmarks, which were centerpieces to the cities. We also see here one of my favorite items, which is these toothpicks, which, they are TV tower toothpicks, that you could buy as a souvenir when you went to a TV tower.
Now, I hadn't realized the significance of those. And mm-hmm. also, they're in a base, which is mm-hmm. like the globe, which formed the middle of the Berlin mm-hmm. TV tower. You mm-hmm. see, I've done my yeah. research. These ceramic sort of awards. Now, I think I read about these.
Mm-hmm. These are the Laurel East German TV Awards. So those were equivalent to the Emmys. In LA, we've been seeing a lot of for your consideration billboards. So it's fun to see that they actually had in East Germany a sort of equivalent TV award.
That is quite interesting because you don't sort of think of East Germany as being like that. They do look a bit fragile.
They're ceramic, and that's the gold and silver award there.
Right. Wow. Okay. Is that Meissen, the ceramic?
Yes. And some of the plates are also Meissen.
Right. Okay. Okay. And then there's this abstract painting here, which I can work out is some people watching TV, mm-hmm. but what's the mm-hmm. significance of this?
This is a Hungarian painting by Maria Turi. And here we're in the section Magic of TV. So thinking about how TV is a new technology that could really put some magic into your television and to your TV room or living room, which they were usually before. And so this is abstract painting. You can see these four people, it's kind of a cubist style, watching a TV.
Yeah, I'm not up on my art style, so I neglected to say it's cubist. It just looked abstract to me.
I'm saying cubist because there are like cubes in the background on the I think it must be a wallpaper pattern. And I like it because it's so colorful. And although at that time they probably would have been watching black and white TV, and the box of the TV is black and white.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'll be adding photos of some of these items to the show notes, so make sure that you check out these. Now, directly behind us is a collection of, safe to say, old TVs. Yes. Some of these I sort of recognize from my youth or the style of them, despite living in Western Europe. But what are the notable ones here?
Right, so here we have the KVN TV from the mid-50s in the Soviet Union. It's paired with a postcard of a child and a Santa Claus figure watching this TV. And as you can see, the screen is very small. It's only a few inches wide, but this would have had a magnifying glass over the top, which you can see there in the postcard that's paired with it. And the magnifying glass would magnify the image, so it's not so tiny.
That's really clever.
Yeah.
That's low tech but smart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then one of the ones that I was fascinated with around here was the Sharp TV, because I didn't expect to see a Japanese TV. What's the story behind this?
So this was a Japanese-made TV that was made to export in East Germany. It's funny because we had originally tried to get some of these TVs working, and this was the one that almost worked. The technology, I would say, was a little bit better than the other ones. And it's the antenna connections were different from the European ones, so they would have had to have a converter on the back of those for use in East Germany. But it is in German, as you can see.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised they import it, because obviously they would have had to use hard currency or barter or something to do that. And I would imagine color TVs was not necessarily high priority to import.
Yeah, we don't know too much about this TV. I'm not sure. I think it was sold it was aimed for visitors East Germany.
Or party loyalists as well. Okay, yeah, got it.
Sure. Got it. I really like the, we have a TV game console here.
Now, I liked this.
the TV spiel.
But this wouldn't have been in a lot of homes, though,
no,
would it?
No, because they were quite expensive to have. They were more aimed for community centers and youth centers, where they would just buy one and then people could all play it there collectively. And you can see there's different like games like squash and tennis and foosball that you can play with this game. So I think of it, it's like the Wii video game, kind of playing sports together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And fostering that sort of socialist community spirit. It's in very good condition. I'm surprised.
Yeah,
it's almost as though it hasn't been played.
One of the buttons there is kind of broken. So I think maybe that player was.
Yeah, but it's certainly been well looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything else here that's... Obviously, everything here is worth looking at, but we can't cover everything.
Let's see. I really like how small the portable TVs are. There was the new technology that you could make the TV so small and carry it around with you. You could take these camping because they could plug into your car.
Yeah.
Or you could just move it around your house to different rooms.
Yeah. I remember having one like the black and white one over there and carrying and being able to move that from room to room.
We also have this doily on top of the TV, which was donated to us by a Romanian woman. She crocheted it while watching TV in order to cover a TV with it.
This is one of the things I love about this museum, is covering that social history and the minutiae of domestic life, as well as the the bigger story.
Right.
It's great. So where should we go next?
Let's see. Well, we have some of these magazines. These are Neues Leben, which was a East German youth magazine, and they on the cover have these illustrations that are kind of anti-TV. There's a couple here. They're watching a romantic scene on TV, and the woman's taking her partner out to the real world to watch the moon in real life.
Dragging him away from his chair.
Mm-hmm. And there's another one of someone getting ice hockey gear on to watch an ice hockey game on TV on an armchair instead of going out and actually playing.
I think that still happens today. and then there's this guy who's reaching forward to touch the button of his TV, and then the next drawing is him reaching forward to take a book out out of a cupboard as well.
I think it's interesting, even back then, there's these kind of warnings of watching too much TV.
Little did they know where it was going to go.
Where it would go. And we also have these TV repair books, because oftentimes the technology was not so great and needed to be repaired in a kind of DIY spirit. So this is, I really like the cover of this red practical TV repair book.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very vivid. And, the thought of people actually DIY fixing their TVs.
They're actually quite
scary.
Dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of high voltage in the back of these things.
But hopefully whoever was looking at that could read the diagrams correctly.
I read somewhere there was a Soviet brand that was almost got a nickname as a fire starter or something like that.
Yes. We have, a poster here, which you see a husband and wife watching, again, ice hockey on TV, and their kitchen is burning in the background. And then there's an image at the bottom that shows them looking at their burnt kitchen because they were too distracted watching TV, which is kind of the opposite of the TV actually burning.
Yeah.
But there's like a lot of fire involved.
Yeah.
You'd think maybe if they were cooking and left the TV on, it could also explode.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah. No, really interesting. Did they feel the same about radio or not? Was there a particular worry about TV because that required more attention, I guess?
Mm-hmm, it did. Radio, I'd say, obviously had been around longer. We have a TV here that was a double radio and TV CombiVision. I don't think it could be used at the same time, though. The radio and TV.
Yeah. I'm not sure how you do that anyway, unless you prefer the radio commentary of a sport than the TV commentary.
Right, you could do. So it's kind of one or the other.
Yeah.
In terms of technology. Let's see. Here we have In Domestic Life. It's a section. A number of photos showing TVs and homes. In this photo, we see a family watching TV, and it's part of a typical Soviet combination shelves system. It would be placed on a wall within the shelves. We also here have a book, a children's book, a
which
children's
is
primer.
Very sexist. I have to comment on this one. It's very dated.
It's a page about electricity in the home. And there's, you know, different kinds of plugs and the names for these items because I think it's for kids learning how to read, and there's lots of TVs on it. But the female child is vacuuming while the boy is reading.
Shocking. Shocking.
Gender roles
already. So much for socialist equality.
Yes, unfortunately. And we have a lot of clips relating to domestic life. Some of these are sitcom equivalents. There weren't technically like American sitcoms, but there were types of family comedy programs.
And how far could they go in terms of comedy? I mean, I would imagine it had to be personal comedy. It couldn't be anything wider than that.
For the most part, yes. In the like block of flats genre, some of the shows were actually criticized for the opposite of staying too much within the apartment and only showing the family and not showing how they were involved with community life. So some shows were actually criticized for that.
Right.
And we do have, not in this section, in a section on alternative currents, we have a clip from one of those types of shows that was quite cynical of the government and was censored.
Right.
Because it was.
And which country was that?
That was Poland. It's a show called Alone in 1986, after, like 3 years after it was
Yeah,
films.
So 80, 81, Solidarity repressed in 81. Mm-hmm. And then this was almost perhaps thought of as a little bit of a safety valve or something for the population, I guess.
But again, it's still focused on the like the personal stories.
Yeah.
To be able to have a wider commentary.
Yeah. So this next section here, Crossing Borders, I found interesting because as a child in the UK, we did have an East German TV program that was shown that absolutely freaked me out because I just found it so dark. Singing Ringing Tree.
Yes. I've actually seen
that. With this scary dwarf.
And there's like a weird bear.
Yeah. And a odd goldfish that's half it's bizarre. Anybody who wants to see it, there's loads of clips on
YouTube.
We
screened it last December here, and I was a bit creeped out too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is with these things, with the program, looking back at it again on YouTube, I'm trying to look for hidden meanings as to whether there's a political message there that the dwarf was NATO or stuff like that. But I think it was just purely for and a lot of this stuff was around entertainment.
And if the messages were there, it was often very hidden. Or in the case of like the children's shows, it was kind of just about building values that weren't that different from, say, like Sesame Street, like love your neighbors kind of thing.
Yeah, and building that community cohesion that was so important to these to these states.
Right now we're watching a Czech cartoon and an East German exported version of that same cartoon. And they're the same episode of Kurtek the Little Mole, and it's the umbrella episode. So he finds an umbrella. But the East German one was exported. It was for home video, so it's 5 minutes versus a bit longer Czech original version.
And did they export much of their? I guess the cartoon stuff was probably easy to export.
Cartoons were very popular to export because, especially ones that didn't have dialogue like this one.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Yeah, you didn't need to do subtitles or dub it.
We also have another, this section does have a few, there's two screens here. They show comparisons. There are a few other cartoons. One is was Pat and Matt, which was another Czech cartoon.
Right.
And it was exported to all over the place, and only one country put dialogue on it, and that was the Netherlands.
Okay.
So our chief curator, who is Dutch, he actually grew up with that.
Yeah.
And they're these two bumbling kind of neighbors that love to fix things. They usually come up with very inventive ways to fix things. But there's also the context in Czechoslovakia that people often did have to fix things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was in this section I was watching the Khrushchev Nixon debate at the Moscow trade fair, which I found fascinating.
We show the color version of that and the black and white newsreel, because that was right when the color technology of TV was becoming more widespread. And so there's that. They actually talk about TV and that America was filming it on color TV tape and America was ahead of the Soviet technology, but also just that the political moment is also.
Yeah. And Khrushchev gets all uppity then because he says, no, you're not ahead. We're ahead of you and like, we're going to bury you.
And what does color TV matter in the big scheme of things?
Yeah, it's a really interesting clip. If I can find it on YouTube, I'll post that in the show notes as well, because I think it shows Khrushchev's personality really well.
As I've never seen like a full like video of him like talking, and their dynamics are really interesting just to see on video.
Absolutely. I mean, he could have his own TV show. I mean, he was great.
He had a lot of hand movements.
Oh yes.
And now we're watching another cartoon in this section. That's the East German and West German Sandmenschen, which was based off of the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale.
Okay. So which one is the West German one?
The West German is on the left, and the the East German is on the right. They were actually started within, they were first broadcast within 3 weeks of each other. The East German one was a lot more popular and was shown in other countries too. But the West German one, he looks a little bit more creepy, I would say, which he has like a fuller beard.
He looks more adult.
He does. That's like a very good point. He looks more adult, and you can see on the West German one, there's these aliens, and the episode is about a coffee can spaceship, whereas the East German one on the right, where the bit cuter Sandman, he is, this episode is named after a real spacecraft. So I think for the most part, the East German one was more based on real life,
right.
Whereas the West German one was more fantastical.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I'd not seen the West German one before, and there is that. So did the West German one come out after the East German one?
I'm not sure which one was 3 weeks later.
Okay.
I think it was West German.
Right. But the East German Sandman won the Cold War Battle of the Sandmen.
Mm-hmm, it did.
Great.
And that was a show that was broadcast at night as an evening show, so it's kind of regulated family schedules, like a kid,
yeah.
You would go to sleep after watching Sandman.
Yeah.
And it's a really like a bedtime story that was on TV versus being read,
yeah,
a bedtime story.
And that's the same thing in the West as well.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
We had Magic Roundabout and things mm-hmm, like that in the mm-hmm, UK that mm-hmm. were on at a regular, mm-hmm. regular time, like this. Okay. I'll have to have another look at those. So we're just coming to the next section, which is called Crossing Borders.
And these are the objects in that section.
Now, I found this really surprising because you expect the Eastern Bloc countries to have just had their own TV shows.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But obviously in East Germany, they were receiving some of the West German stations,
right.
And some of the other countries around mm-hmm. the periphery of the Eastern Bloc would have been able to pick up,
right.
Western stations as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we have TV guides. And I never expected to see a photo of Joan Collins,
right.
on front of an Eastern Bloc TV guide. Tell
exactly.
me more.
So we have Joan Collins on the front of a TV guide from the very popular show Dynasty. It was very popular in Yugoslavia. And we have this TV guide with a schedule. This is also a Yugoslav TV guide. You can see there's Italian programs and Austrian programs on this TV guide, and it gives the whole schedule of when they would be shown on the day. Yugoslavia was a lot more open to importing Western programming, but even in this Romanian magazine, more closed off country, you see the Saint and Roger Moore on the cover.
I wasn't sure whether it was Roger Moore
mm-hmm,
or not,
mm-hmm.
or whether it was a Romanian actor, but I'm pleased to say, and I know some of our listeners are big Roger Moore fans, will be delighted to know that the Saint was in Ceausescu's Romania.
And the Saint versus, what was the other show? It's a kind of rival spy thriller show.
The Avengers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's Raz Buntorilor, and Romanian is. So it's talking about
right.
that kind of rivalry, which was mostly in Britain.
Yeah.
But here it is, they're talking about it in Romania.
And how did, I mean, in Romania, for example, the Saint is obviously showing Western life
mm-hmm.
and Western values.
Mm-hmm.
How did they handle that
mm-hmm.
sort of like contradiction of almost a celebration of
mm-hmm.
Western values
mm-hmm.
on their TV?
So that's a good question, because obviously it's not what you think of as like communist TV,
yeah.
But it's entertaining and people like to watch it. So it was very popular. A good example of this is we have a Peyton Place here, which is, this is the cover of a Yugoslav magazine. And Peyton Place is again showing Western values, scandals of a New England town. It was a soap opera. And Mia Farrow was
sadly,
in it.
I remember Peyton Place and Dynasty for that matter.
And that show is canceled by the government for showing those Western values. But they knew there would be too much controversy if they cut it off before the end of the season. So they let it. They just canceled it after the end of the
right.
season, because so many people watched it and enjoyed
right.
watching it.
I mean,
but it did show values that were not socialist.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah. Joan Collins is a socialist icon. I don't think is a right. very unlikely right. Sentence mm-hmm. there. But Yugoslavia was in a slightly different position, mm-hmm. and we're going to have a look at the mm-hmm. Tito exhibition in, mm-hmm. in a moment, because it was a more accessible mm-hmm. society, certainly mm-hmm. from the West, mm-hmm. And they could pick up Italian TV mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. from where they yeah. were as well.
We'll talk about that more. But yeah, Italians, we have some audio interviews. We have an audio station in one of the sections, and a lot of the interviews, three of them are Yugoslav, and they're talking about like watching Italian TV or actually having Italian TV sets, and that someone's memories of watching TV or watching it on like their relatives from the north of Yugoslavia with right. their cool Italian TV set. so there were a lot of more crossing of borders
right.
there.
Right. And then alternative currents mm-hmm. is around... Well, sort of, I think that there's some stuff here around towards the end of the 1980s when right. obviously there were the undercurrents mm-hmm. against the socialist governments mm-hmm. there. But I'm presuming that mm-hmm. as far as dissidents and any alternative mm-hmm. views, nothing was shown on mainstream media. Were there anything mm-hmm. like pirate stations or anything
yeah,
like
so
that?
So that's what a large part of the section is about. We show footage from Canal X and the original Video Journal. That was a Czech underground video magazine, and Canal X was a pirate TV station from East Germany. And we actually have an installation behind us of these TVs, and this is replicating a dubbing station that the underground groups would have used to copy VHS tapes to hand over information and their videos
right.
to each
so
other.
Right, so they were making multiple copies of mm-hmm. these and distributing them like a... like video rentals mm-hmm. effectively mm-hmm.
and it's like Samizdat, the like underground literature networks, but this is for VHS tapes and a lot of the times it was like news programming
right.
And you can see here the degradation of the image, the first TV
so
shows
this is
the
showing
better
the degradation
image.
With multiple copies mm-hmm. as the image
okay,
gets worse.
This one needs to be rewound, but the first one, like, it looks okay as an image, but then as you go around, it gets a lot more blotty. And because each time you copy a tape, the image quality gets yeah. worse.
Because I was aware of the Romanian history with VHS tape, mm-hmm. where they were showing mm-hmm. a lot of American films. Mm-hmm. And there's that documentary of that one mm-hmm. woman who dubbed almost all of them, I think, which is really, right, it's a really interesting right. story.
We have a photo there of confiscated... TVs and a VHS player that would have been used to show Western programming.
Right, right. Yeah, because they used to have sort of like video parties where mm-hmm. they'd show, you know, invite a few trusted friends mm-hmm. around to watch these films.
Mm-hmm. Also in alternative currents, not so much the pirate TV station, but an example of video art that was shown on national TV is Sanja Vekovic's personal cuts, where you can see her cutting out pieces, circles of a mask that covers her face, and those images are intercut with footage from a Yugoslav history propaganda film.
Right.
And at the end, you can see her full face. And yeah. that, it's interesting because not only does it use TV programming of the more propagandistic, glorifying Yugoslavia type of programming, but it was shown on TV Zagreb on state television
really?
In the 80s.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So there was some countercultural programming shown on TV in the later years.
Yeah. But Yugoslavia is Again. Slightly different mm-hmm. to some of the mm-hmm. more...
But there's the example of Alternative 4, the Polish block of flats, but also yeah. cynical of the government.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. No, interesting stuff. I mean, this is all, you know, you have this view of a monolithic government mm-hmm. and monolithic media, mm-hmm. and this is sort of like showing that there were chinks and there were mm-hmm. variations from country mm-hmm. to country.
Right.
So we're now looking at transitions, mm-hmm. and I recognize Gregor Gysi here. And I think I've watched mm-hmm. this clip, and mm-hmm. there's Katarina Witz right. in this, and...
Figure skating star.
The musician, can't remember her name. Anyway, So this is, but this is a West German TV mm-hmm. interview post Wende, mm-hmm. I'm presuming. Yep.
So in this section, we show some clips from transitional period, so some Russian clips from the early, from the mid 90s. But on this screen, we show more contemporary ones. This is from the early 2000s, the DDR show, which was an example of nostalgia for the DDR. You can see the figure skating star yeah. of socialism and conversation. Yeah.
Is that Nina
him.
Hagen?
Yes, that
I
is.
Remembered.
Yes.
In the end, I got there.
And they actually, in this clip, show him milking a cow because before he was a politician, he worked on a farm. And it's very bizarre that like they showed this in the early 2000s on German TV.
Yeah. It's almost as though they're showing him up about mm-hmm. what his past was mm-hmm. with this. It is mm-hmm. it is bizarre. And how long did the DDR show last?
It was one season, so
oh, okay.
There's only a handful of episodes.
Yeah. Not a ratings hit then, by the sound of it.
I don't think so. Yep, and you can see the cow in a minute here.
And her name is Curly, apparently.
Yes.
That's me reading the subtitles, not understanding the German.
And this is like a talk show format.
Yeah.
So on the talk show stage, yeah. they have a yeah. literal cow.
And in under, you know, state TV, did mm-hmm. they have things like talk shows?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And who did they have on those?
They had they would just have like normal news shows.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, it's like very similar. Format to what we have
right but they, if they'd have something like the Tonight mm-hmm, Show mm-hmm. presumably they'd interview people like sports stars and stuff like mm-hmm. that and keep it safe
right and it obviously changes from country to country
yeah.
and over time I think earlier on it would have been more politicians and maybe
and really dull
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
a reason to switch mm-hmm. over to West German
and
or
that,
something else.
That's like a reason why a lot of these more entertaining shows became popular because no one was watching those types of more boring shows.
That's really interesting. And what about talent shows and things mm-hmm, like that? Mm-hmm. Presumably they were copying those formats.
Mm-hmm. We have a photo of a Polish like talent show. And there was like Eurovision and the Eastern equivalent of that, which was Intervision for 3 years when they tried to brand it similarly.
Right.
And it was then went back to the SOPO International Song
Festival. So they showed Eurovision in Eastern Europe.
You probably could have picked it up, but they had their own version with the Eastern Broadcasting Union, which interestingly. Eurovision is just for Western Europe, but Intervision, other countries that weren't in Europe could.
Right. Which is the way Eurovision's gone now, because there's Israel mm-hmm. and Australia mm-hmm. in there,
right.
which.
So, sort of that same idea.
Okay. And how was the voting done on those?
I'm actually not sure.
Didn't the Soviet Union win it every time?
Well, the clip we have is Yugoslavia winning. Fourth place in Eurovision.
Right.
And then we have Finland in Intervision, the
really?
Eastern one. Finland participated in both at different times. And the singer who got, we show is Marion Rung, who she did better in Intervision than she did in Eurovision.
Wow. Wow. Was Finland the only country that competed in both?
In both. And that was the only one that was a member of both the EBU and the OIRT,
right,
which are the different broadcasting.
I love little nuggets of information mm-hmm. like that. That's great.
I'll have to look into how the voting was done. Though,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, I'm interested to see whether it was a secret ballot or not.
It might have just been like a judge type of system. Like Song of the Year in the Soviet Union, which is still going on today, was, I believe, a judge. System.
Oh, okay. Okay. So judges inside the studio mm-hmm. who just. So what can you tell me about these posters next to the transition section?
Right. These are from our Ferris collection of paintings. They were actually meant to be printed as posters, but these are original works, and they're from the Glasnost and Perestroika era. A lot of the time, they're very critical of the government and things that were happening in that era, like this one on the right, which is this woman who's crumbling. She's watching TVs, and there's little pieces of her because she's turned to stone. And on the TV screen is a picture of Alan Schumach, who was a TV faith healer. And he makes these, you can see his hands. He would make these hand movements for about like 5 minutes, and he would encourage people to charge water or bread or cream, anything, by like putting it on top or near the TV. And that would heal you.
And that sounds quite bizarre in the context mm-hmm. of the Soviet Union, because mm-hmm. that's sort of smacks of snake oil salesman,
right?
Sort of, and also erring on the side of pseudo religion.
It was like a religious kind of thing. He says wellness in the clip that we have. It's pretty interesting. And he was popular during the transitional time, so it was Russia by the time he was done. Yeah,
right, okay. And these other two mm-hmm. posters, the ballet dancers.
The ballet dancers, this is a reference to the coup in 1991. The ballet dancers are making the, with their legs, the acronym of the State Emergency Committee.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War, because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
And that was during the coup, on TV for the whole day, Swan Lake was shown. So that's like, as part of that coup, that's all you could watch on
that
TV.
That, it's
and the
interesting because
I've
got a connection with that. I interviewed a guy who worked for BBC Monitoring, mm-hmm. and mm. he was on duty the night of the coup,
wow.
and they were just expecting an ordinary night. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Swan mm-hmm. Lake went on, they thought, "Oh,
oh
hang
gosh.
On, something's happened. Either mm-hmm. somebody's died, or there's something going on." And so they mm-hmm. watched Swan Lake all night until the announcement that mm-hmm. "Oh, Gorbachev's a little bit unwell, mm-hmm. and some other people mm-hmm. are now controlling mm-hmm. the country."
Yeah, and so. It's like Swan Lake is often in like the memory of people who were around during the coup. Like that, it's not about ballet; it's about that period.
I mean, I remember watching it on CNN at the mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. and seeing this live video of these Russian mm-hmm. tanks going through Moscow mm-hmm. and stuff, because it was the early days of sort of like 24-hour.
Mm-hmm. But on TV, you couldn't see the tanks; you would see.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. On state TV,
disrupted programming on state TV.
Yeah.
And to the left of that, we have a poster that says Glasnost on TV. And there's these eyes, and one of them's blackened and red. And the first letter of Glasnost, there's another letter in front of it. So it also can mean, it's like a play on words that can also mean a punch in the eye.
Right.
So I think the artist is making a point of there's more like offensive programming and violent programming on TV, and it's like punching you in the eye.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, interesting. I love things like that with hidden meanings. mm-hmm. Particularly the ballet dancer one. I mm-hmm. hadn't realized the...
We've used that actually in the past two shows. One of them was on ballet, and one was just on the posters. So it's really fun to see how we can use these pieces in different contexts.
Yeah.
And the border of the painting is actually a TV set.
Yeah.
Lots of layers to it.
Brilliant. Like that. So the next section we're moving over to is media events, and mm-hmm. there's a great framed mm-hmm. flag. It's a Romanian flag with the communist emblem ripped out, which was very mm-hmm. emblematic of that revolution.
Mm-hmm. Protesters would cut out the emblem in the middle, as a symbol of protest, and this actually happened in a lot of other Eastern European countries. So it's just the three stripes. In the section, we also have clips of the Romanian Revolution where the protesters actually occupied the TV station and broadcast the footage of the revolution on the TV station. When there's one clip we have of them preparing for the broadcast, and one of the people in there, he's sticking his head through the hole in the flag that he had just cut out.
That is a really powerful clip, particularly the preparation one, because it's mayhem in
it's
there.
So
and the TV producers trying to, it's like herding cats, and he's trying to get them in some sort of order. And then there's the countdown, and the poet looks like he's going to faint. I mean, he looks so either scared or nervous.
But then he does gain a bit of composure, like,
through
the clip. But the TV station, they were, you know, they did have to, like, quiet them down, but they did allow the broadcasts to be made.
And so this sort of section covers some of the impactful broadcasts and... You know, the fact that TV can change history.
Exactly.
And I guess one of the iconic clips of the Cold War as far as TV changing history is Gunter Schabowski and his press conference.
Yes, we show his press conference
shown here. And he just looks so laid back to the point of unconsciousness almost.
And the little slip of the tongue that caused the fall.
And also you've got that clip of Ceausescu making the speech in Bucharest. And I also find that really interesting because you can almost see the moment where he realizes the game's up and it's all
when he's getting
imploding.
Booed and he's trying to control the crowd. And you do see like his face when he realizes there might not be any turning back.
Yeah. And his wife's yelling in the background for them to be quiet.
And that was
his
last appearance before execution.
Yeah.
And this section merges these kind of iconic disruptive events like those with the more festive media events that would have been shown on a regular basis, such as May Day parades and sporting events like the Moscow Olympics.
And another great plate.
Another great plate.
So this is the 1980 Moscow Olympics, which was boycotted by the USA, but the Brits turned up.
And we also have a little vase from the Moscow Olympics there.
Yeah.
And
excellent. And is that a sort of scrapbook there?
This is a brigade book, which was like a company scrapbook. And there's a picture of, this is a page commemorating a May 1st parade.
The number one day in the socialist calendar.
And you can see a drawing of a red carnation. And we see a lot of those in the clip we have of a May Day parade in Moscow.
No, I've been to the Socialist Cemetery in Berlin, and a number of times I've been there, and the graves are just covered in these red red carnations. It's really impactful image there. Now, we were talking about the Sandman.
Right.
And the battle of the East and West German Sandmen.
Here we have some objects relating to Sandman. There's a board game, which is, I think, kind of like Candyland, which I played growing up. And there's also
Never
a lamp.
Never made it to the UK, so completely lost on me. But my American listeners, I'm sure, will know.
And there's the different characters and like neighborhoods he goes to, I think. And there's also a lamp with Sandman on him and a Sandman doll and... his friend, the Penguin.
So they actively commercialized some of these shows
made
as well.
Made toys out of the show. So it wasn't just watching the show, it's also bringing these characters into actual objects.
And did they export those to the West?
Not that I know of. Sandman actually probably, because it was so popular. Pat and Matt, yes, there were toys like that. And still today, this is actually a modern Pat and Matt toy.
And your colleague was showing me a video of a Soviet Tom and Jerry, which I found fascinating because it was really good quality animation and in very similar style.
Very similar style to Tom and Jerry. The plot, the whole premise is kind of the same. It's about a wolf who chases a hare, and the only line of dialogue is "Nu pogodi," which is "Well, just you wait." And every episode, he's chasing the hare. So in terms of plot, and also the animation style is like Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, it's a bit like Roadrunner as well.
Mm-hmm. It's like those Warner Brother cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have actually a button with the wolf on it, and he's smoking.
That's not a good example to the youth.
It's not, but that's his character and his kind of iconic thing.
Yeah.
And we also have a dollhouse here that has furniture that came with it, would have come with a TV set. As the piece of furniture. Essential, you have the bed and the kitchen table and cabinets and also a TV.
Yeah. Is this East German or?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Amazing.
And we also have some references to educational TV. So there, we've been talking a lot about cartoons, but there was a thing called school TV that would have been like in the afternoon programming that was educational programming. We have a chemistry video, and we also have a show called Berufen Bild, which is professions on View, and that would be a monthly show about different professions that you could be, like, can be a The one we have is a hairdresser.
Right.
So it talks all about what you do to be a hairdresser.
And we have don't tell me this. It's not exactly targeted at boys.
No. There is. It's interesting. They show a bald man at the beginning, and it's like there's not much you can do if you're a hairdresser. Yeah. It's kind of sad. But the hairstyles are very wacky in that clip from East Germany.
Yeah. Have you seen those programs, English for You? Where it's a East German program where they're teaching English.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's an educational program. And I've got some of the textbooks off eBay.
Wow.
And they are fascinating because it's sort of set in the UK. But Mrs. Jones is being thrown out of her house by the ruthless landlord and things like it's all those sort of storylines and stuff like that.
Within the learning language.
And I've got, there's one, the one book that I've got has a page about learning about the peace movement and the anti-nuclear demonstrations. And whoever owned the book has doodled around it the names of Western pop bands.
What?
But I love it because it's a great sort of, it sort of captures a sort of little moment of somebody's school life in East Germany.
The doodles.
Yeah. Right. I think we've done
almost everything. Kind of went out of order, but
we did
doesn't matter too much.
That's really interesting. So if you are in the LA area, or even if you're further afield, I highly recommend coming to the vendor. The exhibition is on until
October 20th,
but there's loads of interest here whatever time you come here. That has been excellent. I've really enjoyed looking around here.
Thank you.
And this enjoyed is a great museum. I'm glad to be able to publicize it and help you get the word out.
Hope some of these listeners will come by and see all these things in person.
They will be queuing up based on what we've gone through today. So thank you very much for your time.
You too.
Well, that's all we had time for, but if you'd like to learn more, then head over to our show notes, which are at coldwarconversations.com/78. This will also show us a link in some podcast apps. And don't miss the show notes, because they do have videos relating to this episode as well as photos, and are well worth a look. Don't forget, if you'd like that Cold War Conversations coaster I keep on banging on about, then head over to patreon.com/coldwarpod, or again click on the link in your podcast app. You can really help us by leaving reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, or with your favorite podcast provider. This helps to raise our profile and get new guests on the show. And if you can't wait for the next episode, do go over to our Facebook discussion group, where our guests and listeners just like you continue the conversation. Thank you very much for listening. It is really appreciated. Goodbye.
not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.